sometimes controversial, always politically incorrect, and pro-life without exception, without compromise, and without apology. It's the Pro-Life America Podcast with your hosts, Sarah Waits, and the president of Life Dynamics, Mark Crutcher.
Hey guys, welcome to the show. As you heard, I'm Mark Crutcher.
And I'm Sarah Waits.
And she is lurking nearby, as I always say. We've got a lot of stuff to get to today. First, I want to talk about, just for a second, this ongoing scam that's being perpetrated by the Republican Party and by all these talking heads on television. They continue to blame the fact that there was no red wave that they were predicting on the pro-life issue. They're lying. There were a lot of pro-lifers that won elections around the country against pro-aborts. To the extent that the pro-life issue or the abortion issue affected the elections, it's because of this. Money is what drives the American political process. And we now know that the Democrats spent over $300 million on advertising that included defense for legalized abortion. McConnell and the Republicans spent almost nothing. Well, you can talk people into anything if all you present is one side of the argument. So I could go into any court in this country and convict you of even the most heinous crime if I just gave the prosecution side and said, oh, by the way, you can't say anything. Then you're done. That's what's happened here. But for these people to try to blame their failures and their incompetence on the pro-life movement, on the abortion, on the unborn child, on whatever, how you want to characterize that, for them to do that is unconscionable.
And I'm not going to name any names, but you talk about talking heads. I've seen young conservatives who are big in the movement doing that very thing, blaming abortion as the reason for the failure of the elections. And I would say to young pro-life conservatives, look out for those people. That should be a red flag to you, because when they're saying that they're pro-life the rest of the time, but then when it comes down to it, they blame pro-life and abortion on losing elections, that person is not really pro-life.
Yeah, they don't know what they're talking about. Or they do know what they're talking about. They're just being deceptive.
So outside of the elections, there are a few things that are going on, and I think we should devote our attention to. So there was a new study that came out by Just Facts, which is a nonprofit research institute. And their study found that one out of every 179 Americans will eventually be murdered if the current crime rate trends continue. Now, the interesting thing about this, besides just the study, which I think is flawed because it doesn't even consider abortion in this deal.
As a murder, right?
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. I mean, abortion outweighs every other type of intentional death out there.
There's thousands of babies murdered every day, but there's not thousands of any other group being murdered.
Yeah. But the interesting thing about this, and this kind of goes back to something we covered in Line 5, it says that the FBI underreported murder rates and published incomplete data. Nearly 40% of police departments did not provide the FBI with complete crime data for 2021 by the deadline, and the FBI acknowledged a decline in reporting participation from law enforcement agencies. In addition to that, the FBI changed to a new reporting system that, according to Just Facts, made it far more difficult to access national estimates of murders and other crimes. That reminds me of the CDC and the abortion statistics and how they were...
They buried them. It made abortion look better and safer than it was. And they knew exactly what they're doing. But you had practicing abortionists in charge of the abortion surveillance branch at the CDC. So what did you think was going to happen? You know,
another shocking thing, or I guess maybe not so shocking, that has been discovered. According to a user on Twitter, they have found that Harry Potter Hogwarts Mystery Game, which is meant for ages 12 and up on the App Store, has a way of earning gems within the game.
You'll have to explain all this to me because you're one of these gamer nerds and the whole thing makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Okay, so for you and maybe anybody else who doesn't understand this, a lot of these games, they'll be free on the App Store to download, right? So you don't have to purchase anything, and that encourages people to actually get the game. But there's things within inside the game, like if you want an outfit or if you want a pet or if you want to have access to a certain skill or something, you have to have coins or gems or something like that in order to get that. So you can pay $10 for like 400 gems or 1,200 coins. It's a way of earning money within the game. Well, a lot of times they'll have free ways to earn gems, which is usually watching an ad. Well, in this game, two of the ways to earn gems within this game is to donate to Planned Parenthood. Now, keep in mind, this is a game that is targeted at younger people.
It's outrageous.
It's disgusting, but it's not exactly surprising considering Planned Parenthood's track history and record.
Right. No, not at all.
Speaking of track record and history, we have mentioned or we have discussed how the abortion industry and abortionists will use the quote-unquote health of the mother, mental or physical, to justify basically any abortion under the sun. Not too long ago, 23-year-old Keisha Atkins went to abortionist Sharon Carr for an abortion. She had no mental or physical health diagnosis that would say that she needed an abortion, but Sharon Carr justified her abortion by saying that her pregnancy would cause, quote, substantial and irreversible harm to her physical health, her mental health, her family health, her safety, and well-being. All these things were stacked against her.
This is a late-term abortion.
Absolutely. 6 months pregnant. Now, Keisha Atkins lost her life in this.
So Carr kills this girl.
And Carr was forced to testify in a wrongful death lawsuit brought by Keisha's family, which was settled for over $1 million. In this lawsuit, she had to take the stand. And the lawyers were asking her for her justification on what she called the, quote, substantial and irreversible harm. I just selected a few clips from this to basically get the abortionist's rationale for this substantial and irreversible harm. So in this first clip, they're asking her about the risk that the pregnancy would cause on her physical health. And this is what she had to say.
As a medical physician, do you have a specific irreversible harm to her physical health that you can identify that you are basing this decision on?
I would say that not necessarily, no, not irreversible harm, irreversible changes to her physical health, having gone through labor and childbirth.
The law doesn't say irreversible changes.
Yeah.
It says irreversible harm.
Well, even she says irreversible harm. She didn't say irreversible changes.
Right.
And I don't think that you can say that, oh, well, the abortion is justified because the pregnancy will cause her to have some changes to her physical stuff because she gave birth.
Right.
So then they continue to ask her about some of the other things that she says, like substantial and irreversible harm to her mental health. And this is what she had to say.
Can you give us an example of what irreversible harm would occur to Keisha's mental health if she were to carry the baby to term?
That would just be speculation of parenting at a young age as a single mom, financially not stable, depression, anxiety. That would be speculation as to any forward effects on her mental health. It's possible.
So in your interview and your assessment of Keisha Atkins, is it fair to say that you do not have a specific incidence of irreversible harm that you believe she would have incurred to her mental health had she carried the baby to term?
I think that it's a possibility that it could have, sure.
It's a possibility, but certainly not something that was definitely going to happen.
Correct.
Well, I mean, anything could happen.
Anything's possible.
I mean, this is just pulling stuff out of the air.
Yep.
But this is the icing on the cake.
You also indicated here that being forced to continue the pregnancy would result in substantial and irreversible harm to Keisha Atkins' safety. What are you referring to there?
Again, knowing or not knowing the support. She said that she had support at the time. A young single mom, not really making it financially. She's at risk for domestic partner violence and poor social outcomes in general, not continuing education.
Did you make an assessment to determine if her boyfriend was physically violent toward her?
Nope.
So then you were just merely speculating about substantial and irreversible harm to Keisha's safety?
Yeah, speculation and her expressing wishes that she didn't want to be pregnant.
What she didn't want to say is speculation, and yes, I just pulled things out of my rear end.
Right.
Because it doesn't sound so well.
She sees that this attorney's backing her into a corner.
Yeah, absolutely. She basically admits she just made all of this up.
We interviewed an attorney years ago on Life Talk about the issue of having an exception in an abortion bill for the life of the mother.
Yeah.
And his view was that if you had an exception for the life of the mother, what the abortion industry would come out here and do is say that, well, my patient said to me that she was going to kill herself if she didn't have this abortion. So therefore, it was a threat to her life, and therefore, I was justified in doing this abortion. And we actually found a law review article that was written by a pro-abort woman who said that very thing.
Yeah.
That if they ever pass legislation that prevents abortion but has some life of the mother exception, we will just claim that everybody threatens to commit suicide. And you think, well, this is outrageous. And I had pro-aborts call us at the time and, and send us messages saying, oh, that's outrageous.
You guys are banging at the moon.
A trained medical professional would never do those sort of things. Now you have this woman.
This girl didn't even threaten to commit suicide. This woman is just picking what ifs and anything that could happen in her life. And she even goes to domestic abuse. And he said, well, did you interview? And she's like, no, I didn't interview.
She said that Keisha was telling her she had support. So it would seem to me one of your areas of support would be coming from the guy that got you pregnant, right? But just a few seconds later, she says, well, I didn't assess whether he would. She's just assuming he's going to become violent if she didn't have this abortion.
Yeah. Basically, this was just made up excuses to justify the abortion on paper. That's what all of this was.
But Sarah, if you're a baby killer and you say, well, they don't think it's a baby. There's nobody on God's green earth that knows better that an unborn child is a baby than the people who kill them. They're the ones who pull the little body parts out and the heads and the skulls and the chest and whatever. They're the ones who pull all those parts out. They know better than you and I will ever know that that's a living human being. Once you've crossed that threshold, you're capable of saying anything.
Well, you have to remember that they get paid for abortions that happen, not abortions that don't happen.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And you have these same people who are getting paid for the abortion, making the determination of whether or not it's actually needed and justified. You don't have a second opinion for this. They're the ones who are making that decision. And this goes back to a good point that you've made constantly about anytime you have these exceptions for the life and the health of the mother, the industry will take a very liberal view of, quote, life and health of the mother in order to justify the abortions they get paid for.
Yep. And this brings up something that, that most people don't think about when it comes to the abortion issue. If you go to the doctor today, and let's say that you have a sore throat or you think you have a cold or whatever, the doctor does the analysis. He does an examination or she does an examination on you. And they come up with the course of treatment, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Based on what they perceive your malady to be. In the case of an abortion, the patient does that. The patient walks in and says, I have all these problems, and therefore I want an abortion. What the abortionist is basically just a mechanic that carries it out. He or she doesn't make any judgments about whether abortion is the appropriate course of action for that girl. She makes that determination. She does her own analysis. So it would be like if you went in and said, I have a pain in my abdomen and I need an appendix operation. And they said, okay.
Okay. They didn't do any other tests. They just went, okay, well, we'll take your appendix out.
Climb on the table. We'll take out your appendix. And what if the appendix wasn't the problem? And say, well, that's what I'm saying. The patient does her own analysis, her own examination, her own determination of what the proper treatment is. And you're seeing the results of it with this woman right here. She's just saying, basically, I'm just doing the procedure. I'm just the mechanic. I don't have to determine whether her safety is at risk, her health is at risk, her life is at risk, somebody's going to beat her up. I don't have to determine those things.
And like I said, she hides behind this claim of domestic violence as a potentiality. But she clearly wasn't concerned about it one iota since she didn't actually ask her anything about it. She just uses this as a defense.
Well, look how many times she used the word speculation. I was just speculating. Well, you can prove anything speculating.
Well, in the form, it doesn't say that she speculates that there's potential things. She says not having this abortion will cause irreparable harm. She doesn't say, I speculate that some bad things could one day happen.
It might.
It might.
Right. it's preposterous. But to suggest that they're practicing medicine, that this abortionist that killed this girl, to listen to this and then conclude from that that she's practicing medicine is preposterous. It's outrageous.
Speaking of outrageous, there was a case where a man named Robert Crawford was...
That's here in Texas.
This is here in Texas.
Bryan, Texas.
Robert Crawford was found guilty of aggravated sexual assault of a child. He was sentenced to life in prison and a fine of $10,000. In this case, it was discovered that he had a history...
A long history of sexually abusing children.
One of the victims they found was assaulted by Crawford in the 1970s. Now, this was brought to the district attorney's attention because of a 14-year-old boy who was reporting child sexual assault. When they were doing their investigations, however, they found that in 1995, Crawford impregnated a 12-year-old girl and brought her to an abortion clinic after learning about the pregnancy. And the crime was never reported at the time.
Well, this goes to the heart of our child predator project. Mm-hmm. And we had all kinds of these scumbags like this guy. Mm-hmm. And my suspicion is, knowing how these kind of guys are viewed in the penal system, when he gets to the Huntsville State Penitentiary here in Texas, his life is going to take on a whole different course.
Well, they just found these cases. There's no telling how many girls.
Oh, yeah. These are the ones they found.
Young girls. Yeah.
But let's make a point here, because this is something we said in our child predator report.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
In 1995, a 12-year-old girl was being raped by this guy. She gets pregnant. He takes her to an abortion clinic in Houston. Abortion clinic in Houston never reports this to the authorities. My argument would be that every child that this guy raped or molested or impregnated or took for an abortion between 1995, at least 1995,
at least,
and 2021, every one of those instances is the responsibility of Planned Parenthood or whoever the other abortion clinic was that he took her to. They had a duty to report and they didn't. And what I'd want to know is the Harris County or Houston, Texas, is the district attorney there investigating this abortion clinic? Find out which abortion clinic this was and investigate them for violation of Texas's mandatory reporting laws.
My guess is not.
I suspect that there's nothing being done about this. But anyway, this is a classic example of what we have been saying. The abortion lobby wants to talk about, oh, you didn't even have an exception for rape or incest.
What about these young girls who are the victim of rape? Yeah.
Right. And this is a solid gold, irrefutable fact. And if there's any pro-aborts listening out there and you want to call in, you and I will argue this out. There is nothing that protects people like this guy right here, Robert Crawford, or any of the other ones that we wrote about. Nothing protects rapists and incestors more than legalized abortion. This is where they go to get silence. These guys profit from secret abortions. And if you allow exceptions for rape and incest, you're protecting these guys. You're not protecting that girl. The best thing that could have happened to this 12-year-old girl or to any of the other victims that came afterward is that this guy got reported and got indicted. There would not have been other victims. He'd have been in the state penitentiary then instead of now. He could have gone to the state penitentiary 27 years ago, and all the victims during that 27-year period of time would not have been raped or sexually assaulted.
Yeah.
But because of abortion, they were.
Well, and our child predator website shows that the outrage that the abortion industry and the quote-unquote women's reproductive movement claims about all these girls who've been raped is absolutely false. Because if they cared, they would report. But they don't care. They care about the money. And they use these girls to justify what they're doing.
Well, I want you to picture this in your mind. It's 1995. This 12-year-old girl is being taken by the hand into an abortion clinic in Houston by this scumbag, right?
Yeah.
And that abortion clinic looks at those two and says, he's the one with the money. He's the one we're going to protect.
Yeah.
And so that's what they did. They did a secret abortion on a 12-year-old girl, never reported it, because if they had reported it,
it would have been bad for business.
Well, and if they had reported it, he would have gone to jail then. So we know for a fact they didn't report it.
And we have cases, and the actual cases part of our child predator report, where there are girls who are at the clinic saying, I'm being forced to have this abortion. Yeah. I'm being raped. Help me. And they still don't report.
We had one, I think, if I remember correctly, she was in Ohio, where the father of this girl, her biological father, was having sex with her. He'd gotten her pregnant for the second time, took her back to the same abortion clinic that didn't report it the first time.
Because he knew that they wouldn't report.
he required them to let him sit in on the counseling because he didn't want her to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he got sloppy, apparently. He got up to go to the restroom or something. Mm-hmm. And while he was gone, the girl said, "Help me. That's my father, and he's raping me. He's the one that's got me pregnant." He comes back and sits down. They do the abortion. No report is ever made.
It's disgusting.
It is.
Speaking of disgusting, another thing that's happened here in Texas is that a man named Mason Herring was indicted on 2 felony counts because of slipping an abortion drug in his wife's drinks. Him and his wife had separated earlier in the year. They were attending marriage counseling, and he had expressed to her in text messages that he was unhappy about the pregnancy. But he started lecturing her on hydration and offering water, and his wife said that she became severely ill after drinking the first cup that appeared cloudy, which he claimed was because of the water pipes being dirty or the cup. She became suspicious, and she started refusing other drinks that he offered her, and later she found packaging in the trash for a drug that contained misoprostol. Now, the baby was born prematurely, but thankfully is healthy and well. But this is not the first time that we've seen this.
We've had lots of those cases.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it goes back to that deal. Anybody that thinks legalized abortion serves the interest of women is nuts.
Mm-hmm.
It serves the interest of sexually irresponsible and sexually predatory males.
Mm-hmm.
That's who profits from abortion.
Abortion is a safety net for them.
It's a safety net.
And we've got an entire report dedicated to women who were assaulted and killed because they refused to have an abortion.
Right.
That doesn't count the women who were assaulted and left in nursing homes or whatnot. And it doesn't count women like this who were slipped drugs by the men.
Yeah. This whole argument that this is something that serves the interest of women is just so incredibly, you know, you say preposterous. That's not even a good enough word. It's just, it's an out and out bald faced lie.
Yeah.
And the thing that I wonder about is how so many women have fallen for this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
That's what's scary to me is how so many women are so naive or so simple minded or whatever the reason is that they fall for this.
Women who claim to be feminist, women who claim to talk about patriarchy and oppression of men, cannot see the harm that abortion does to women, not just from the physical and the breast cancer and everything like that, but situations like this. They cannot see it.
The early feminists did see this. Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Virginia Woodhull, all of these women.
Sarah Norton. Yeah.
Sarah Norton. The early feminists, they all opposed legalized abortion because they saw what it does to women.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't oppose it because it was the murder of children.
Some
of them did.
Yeah.
But you got to remember, when these women were opposing abortion, no one had ever seen an unborn child. They didn't have sonograms back then.
Mm-hmm.
Their argument basically surrounded the issue of the harm it does to women.
Mm-hmm. Treats women like sexual objects.
Right. Exactly.
That men can use and then throw away whenever they're done with it.
Right.
And I think that legalized abortion has shown that's exactly what abortion does.
Well, I remember one pro-life feminist back in the 80s saying something about what abortion does is it allows women to be sexually exploited by men.
Mm-hmm.
And if the worst thing that happens to him is that she gets pregnant, she can be vacuumed out and used again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it in a nutshell right there.
You know, I think this parallels with something that's kind of interesting. Over the years of legalized abortion and the sexual revolution, the role of protection against pregnancy has kind of by default fallen to women.
Sure.
Women are the ones who take chemical contraception, right? And there have been repeated attempts over the years to introduce male chemical contraception.
It ain't happening.
And it never takes off.
Right.
Not once. Right. The men are like, "Oh, look at all these side effects. They're awful. They do this, this, and this." Well, chemical contraception for women is awful too. It has all of these side effects. And yet, it seems to be that women are the only ones who will subject themselves to it, not men.
Right. Of course, as you know, I'm one of the world's worst about not going to the doctor.
Right. Your arm could fall off and you're like, "I'll just get some duct tape. I'm probably fine."
Right. Yeah.
Just tape it back on.
It'll be all right. It'll be great. I'll be fine. But that's men in general.
Men have two settings. I'm fine, rub some dirt on it, and then I'm dying.
Right.
There's no in between.
Right. But if you sit down and made a list of the physical problems that can happen to a woman as a result of having an abortion, a torn cervix or perforated uterus or lacerated vaginal opening or whatever it might be.
Or the connection between abortion and breast cancer, which we talked about in episode, I believe, 41 with Angela Lanfranchi. I will put the link to that in the description. If you have not listened to that episode, you have to go listen to it.
But If you were to list all of these things and then say to a group of guys, would you submit to something voluntarily, a procedure that might result in these things?
And we're going to pass legislation where it's not just doctors who can do it.
It can be anybody off the street.
It can be anybody. A blind procedure. If you told men that vasectomies were going to be opened up to people with no medical licensure, and they were doing it blind, how many men do you think would sign up for that?
Zero.
Zero.
Zero men would sign up for that.
But anybody can do abortion.
Anyway, is that all you have?
That's all I've got.
The time always goes by so quickly.
Enjoy my conversation.
Is that what it is?
Just my sparkling conversation.
That must be what it is. We always look at our plans before the show and think, oh, this will be a short 10 or 15 minute show.
It could be that you're just long-winded.
That could be part of it. Anyway, we're done. Until next Thursday, remember, Life Dynamics is not here to put up a good fight.
Mm-mm, we're here to win.
Because winning is how this killing will stop. We'll see you next week.
Bye, guys.